Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we were last week when I was up in the far north in Alaska. I had brought up more than once while I was up there the issue of water and various points of information that I had come across in my reading material. And we have a wonderful guest today, Susan Mark, and this is a subject matter that she's dedicating a lot of time, research, effort, and interest to. And she's put out a book called Aqua Shock, The Water Crisis in America. Susan, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Donna. I appreciate it.
Now, you are an award-winning journalist. You've also written a number of things, and you have... Well, my goodness, at the Denver Post, you've been there for a number of years. And
well, I haven't been there for a little while, but that was my last newspaper job, yes.
Okay. You've written for Business Week, the LA Times, Forbes, and Women's World. You've gotten all kinds of awards for what you've done. Susan, it is in the news. We have so much dealing with water, with pollution, and there was so much material that you offered in your book, some of which I was familiar with, other points of detail that I wasn't familiar with, and this had to have taken quite a bit of time for you to be able to research. Were you researching this all on your own, and if so, what got you motivated? What pushed your buttons that said, I got to find out more about this?
Well, I live in Colorado, where on the nightly television news, they tell you what the temperatures were for the day, and also the water supply for the day, or how much water for the month. And so you're very cognizant of how much rain we've had, whether or not we need to be worried about our water in the summer, in the upcoming months, or whatever, because Colorado relies on the snow, the melting snowpack for its water supply. So, you know, that's in your face too. And then I have a very dear friend who is a rancher, and she and I would ride our horses, and she'd be talking about all these different proposals they'd have to put forth if they wanted to expand or add livestock, because we have very strict water rights here in Colorado. And I got interested in it that way. And then I began to, kind of look into it more, and it took me about a year to do it. The interesting thing about in researching a book on water, I've been a journalist for, I'm not going to tell you how many years, but several decades, and I've covered everything from war, religion, famine, natural disaster. The most contentious issue I've ever dealt with is water, because every single person has a vested interest, because we all need water to live, to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen, you go researching on the web, you look at some of these websites, and you have to pay attention to the sources, because everybody has a vested interest and everybody tries to promote their own agenda. So it's an interesting topic to research.
It really would be. And if you look at American history, there were wars over water by ranchers, you know, in Texas and Oklahoma and, you know, through Montana, whoever.
Virginia. You don't have to be just in the West. Virginia, Georgia, everywhere. I mean, right now there's a controversy still going on in Georgia where, Atlanta, we've all been familiar with all the water problems Atlanta's had over the past few years. And somebody discovered that the survey that was done in the 1800s that drew the state lines for Georgia and Tennessee, that the state marker actually has not been, they've not been following the actual survey. There was a mistake way back when.
Oh.
And so somebody turned this up, and it just so happens, surprise, surprise, that if they followed the claimed 1800 survey, it would put the Atlanta's or Georgia's border somewhere in the middle of the Nickajack Reservoir.
That's a little unsettling.
Yes, and you know, if they really followed it, how does this sound? Chattanooga, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So at any rate, there's all kinds of wars and fights. And you know, you can look at places like Chaco Canyon, south of us, you know, and when the water runs out, civilizations collapse. I mean, history is a lesson in that. You know, I think maybe that's a little, I think people, that's why in the past, maybe 6 months, people really started to pay attention to the water issue. When I first started researching this book, water was still a very peripheral issue. You know, mm-hmm. you had to hunt and hunt and hunt, except for people that really had it on their brain. And now it's, I mean, National Geographic just came out with their special edition on water. You
right.
have, you know,
mm-hmm.
you have what coming up this week. Well, I guess last weekend was the race, but coming up on, I think it's on Friday, isn't it? This Bravo, the television station, and Dow, their Live Earth special on water. I mean, this is, you know, it's become very much in your face, although unfortunately it's not quite in enough people's faces for us really to pay attention to it.
Well, I think it all depends on where you live. I think that there's so much of this. But no, you make a point in your book that I thought was extremely significant. We have all of this concern about water.
Mm-hmm.
Our climate is changing. This is nothing new for this planet. And you make the statement in your book, there is just as much water on Earth today as there ever has been. But it changes where it is located due to various shifts.
It's not always an issue of quantity. You know, we have the same amount of water, but population has just exploded worldwide. I mean, here in the United States, our population is up maybe 70% over the last 50 or 100 years. Globally, it's up 120%. So we have tremendous population, which adds to the demands.
Yes.
We have population shifts. We have people moving from, we have this increasing numbers of people, and then increasing numbers moving to places where the water isn't. For example, you know, Southern California, Tucson, mm-hmm. Albuquerque, Phoenix, Denver, Dallas, all those are arid climates. There's not much water. And then you have this alternative energy solutions where you use, where people are, you know, a lot of this oil shale is located. We're looking for more energy solutions. Oil shale deposits, the biggest ones are where there's very little water, and to get the oil shale out requires tremendous amounts of water. You know, we sometimes forget that it takes so much water to do everything, to produce energy,
mm-hmm.
to grow our food, to manufacture our goods. I mean, water is just it's our lifeblood and more than just to consume physically.
Well, that's true. And you look at history, and there are areas like the Sahara Desert
mm-hmm.
that used to be lush and tropical. I mean, they go out now on archaeological expeditions and find all kinds of things where at one point there was abundance, and now it's just desert. And there's contributing factors that people will do that bring that about. It's like our Dust Bowl that we are so aware of that happened in the United States. And not understanding how to take care of the water and to be able to use it wisely. But this is a very real factor. And the United States, for a long time, we were able to supply all kinds of food through the world and export the food. We had such an abundance of it. And today, so much of our farmland has disappeared. I know here in the state of Washington, it's really sad to me to see all of these housing developments go up in areas of farmland that really produced tremendous amounts of food. And if we no longer are able to feed ourselves and we have to depend on external sources, we are really, really going to be in the deep six.
Well, you know, the ultimate, kind of a sad joke, but, you know, people came up with a new way to clean the air by adding ethanol to our gasoline. Well, what do they use to make the ethanol? Corn. Lo and behold, they've chosen to select a food source to correct our energy issues, our energy, our, mm-hmm. our water, our air pollution
corn.
Problems. So
right.
you have to be careful. It's not just in that case. I don't mean to single it out. It's just a really well-known issue. But you have to be careful that oftentimes the fixes aren't worse than the problems themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're, desalination of brackish water that is in our aquifers below the ground, as well as seawater. Desalination is some people are touting that. Desalination is an expensive process that requires a lot of energy. It takes water to produce energy. Also, what's left over from the desalination process is a very salty brine. The salt you take out has to go somewhere. You know, there have been some studies that show that that can alter the ecosystem of wherever the salt ends up. So,
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's I'm not a scientist, so I don't know, but these are just issues that come up. You have to pay attention to the solutions and the problems. I mean, that's a very common problem.
Yes, and absolutely. And many times we can't see beyond whatever we may desire at the moment, and we don't know how to evaluate or won't take the time to evaluate what kind of a shift this could make.
Something else very interesting to do with water is all these statistics. There are all kinds of facts and figures out there that talk about, how many millions of people are going to be don't have access to fresh water. That 1.8 million children die every year. These are some UN. These are, I believe, are some statistics from the United Nations. But 1.8 million children die every year as a result of water-related diseases. 3 billion people may live in an area with water shortages by 2035. There are all kinds of these statistics, and we talk about climate change. There are a number of people, and I'm not saying if it's right or wrong, there are a number of people that doubt that climate change itself exists. And whether you believe in climate change or you don't believe in climate change, whether you agree with the statistics that are out there or not, you can get really basic to understand the problems we have with water. We have no one will doubt that we have more people, the populations are growing.
Right. Yes.
You have no question that we use more water today. We require more water today than we did back then because we have a greater population.
Mm-hmm.
So you forget some of these statistics and you look around, whether you believe in climate change or not. You look at, say, up in Vermont along the East Coast, the maple trees that produce this wonderful Canadian and Vermont maple syrup that we all love to eat. The maple trees give up their sap two weeks earlier now than they did at the turn of the century, sort of the 1900s. I mean, nature has even recognized that something different has happened.
Mm-hmm.
The Arctic, you look at the pictures that have been taken, the Antarctic ice sheet is melting, Arctic ice sheet is melting. I mean, things are happening that you don't have to buy into the statistics. You can actually visually see that these things are happening.
Well, of course. Look at the volcanic eruptions.
Occurring. What goes up comes down. That's all going to come down into our water supply around the world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's carried in the atmosphere, many, many times around the Earth. It just hovers up there. We had Mount St. Helens in 1980 that ruptured here. And by golly, everything was affected for a long period of time. And it involves it affects cloud cover. So Mother Nature, if she has a severe PMS attack, we better pay attention because, believe me,
having a severe PMS attack here with water.
Yes, and you don't fool around with Mother Nature. Now, you've got some points in your book that I really found intriguing. One is that in Bangladesh, now this is not just in Bangladesh, it happens in other parts of the world, but especially in Bangladesh and India, that hundreds of thousands of people were poisoned by arsenic-contaminated well water for a number of decades. But this was something where the arsenic was naturally in the environment. The wells went down so far, there was enough of an effect. And here are these people being poisoned by their own water supply.
You don't have to be in Bangladesh. You can go to New Jersey. You can go to anywhere where there's...
Right.
It's naturally occurring in the limestone type rock, and as the water the water is moving underground. I mean, that's what our water table is. The aquifers have water moving through, and oftentimes they'll pick up what's in the ground. So you don't have to head to Bangladesh. I mean, the state of New Jersey gives away free arsenic testing kits. I believe California has had issues with arsenic in the water too, and recently. So I mean, it's not just Bangladesh.
Right.
It's, you know, not just third world.
That's why
country.
I said in other parts, you know, it's all,
yeah.
it's not the only place that this happens, mm-hmm. but with there, you have such massive, massive amounts of population. And here, for decades, they were being poisoned. And it was a natural essence. And like you said, you can always go and get your water testing kits. And I know here in the Pacific Northwest, especially where I am, mm-hmm. there was a very heavy pollution of arsenic mm-hmm. that was known about for years. And they tell people, in fact, we'll see ads on television here in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. They'll say, go, and if you want to check your soil, they're especially concerned with the soil, but you want to check your soil, go in, do this is what you do. You can get these free kits.
But so, do people take advantage of it and do it? That's another
well,
issue.
Well, I think some do, mm-hmm. but most of the time I don't think that they bother. And,
yeah.
You know, it's really interesting. Now, you talk also about the dams. You go into many, many aspects of, like, Hoover Dam. Now, Lake Mead could be dry by 2014, and when it comes to the Hoover Dam, they're concerned they're not even going to have hydroelectric power
yes.
because the water levels are going to be so low. So we have a significant change here, and of course we're talking about Nevada, Las Vegas, which has millions of people dependent on, total desert.
But it all yeah. relies on the Colorado River. The Colorado River feeds much of the western part of the United States and the Southwest. I mean, without the if the Colorado River's out of commission, one of the big problems not only is drought, but one of the big problems is that when they allocate it, we bring up water laws, which different parts of the country allocate the water that is available in different ways. It just so happens that much of the West relies on something called prior appropriation, which is a system of water rights, where you have the right to the water, you own the right to the use of a certain amount of the water. And it just mm-hmm. so happens that the year that they chose to allocate the water in the Colorado River, the rights to the water in the Colorado River, happened to be a high water year, so that say we'll just make it for simplicity's purposes. Say we assume that the Colorado River here this year we have 100 gallons of water in the Colorado River. Of course, there are hundreds of thousands, millions of gallons, but let's just say 100 gallons. And okay, we give you have the right to 2 gallons, you have the right to 10 gallons, somebody else has the right to 12 gallons. Okay, it all adds up to 100. Well, in reality, the actual amount of water, the average amount of water that runs the Colorado River. Doesn't even hit that 100-gallon mark. I mean, on a regular year, it's like 80 gallons. So automatically, there's 20 gallons, people are going to be without the water. So we have that as one of the original plans. So even people who have rights to the Colorado River don't get all the water they're entitled to now because we're not at the high water mark. We're at a much lower water mark. So that's already thrown the balance off. And you know, millions and millions of people rely on the Colorado River, not only for food, for water sustenance, but for to grow crops and things like that. And so you have a problem there. That's one of the reasons Lake Mead is in trouble. The other reason Lake Mead's in trouble, of course, is drought and mm-hmm. overuse. But, you know, not just to pick on Lake Mead, that's all over the country. All those kinds of things have happened. You know, and you go down to, say, Florida, which is a peninsula surrounded on three sides by water. I mean, they have compared with here in Colorado, they have an abundance of rain that falls every year, you know, 50, 60, 80 inches. I don't mm-hmm. know off the top of my head the exact amount, but they're short on water. And the reasons why are many, but it's a microcosm of the rest of the world's problems. You have overpopulation, you have development not done with necessarily with far-sighted look at things. One of the people that I interviewed for the book, he's a very well-known architect and urban planner. His name is Dan Williams. He's out of Seattle, actually. And he puts it this way. He's done some extensive studies that in Florida. What happens is when they developed Florida, they basically filled in the swamps and built over the
right.
So no matter how much rain falls, the infrastructure that exists can only handle so much, so the rest of it just goes away. Or it can't get back into the aquifers to recharge the aquifers, to recharge mm-hmm. what's in the ground. And so it's a combination of overpopulation, overuse. the way we develop is and have developed is wrong. Although Seattle has taken the lead in doing these sustainable development now. You know, now people are waking up to the importance of sustainable development, where you know the water goes back in the ground. You disconnect pipes or your downspouts from the sewer system, so and give the water a chance to go back into the soil. But you know, it's on and on. And this, we of course haven't even touched on the pollution. I mean, we've so polluted our lands and our water supplies that you know, it's just, I mean, it's like
really
mind-boggling
yeah, well,
to me.
You know, I think when I was in Russia in 1992, mm-hmm. and how in St. Petersburg we were warned, of course we were warned about this throughout Russia, mm-hmm. not to drink any water and to be very careful. And in St. Petersburg especially, there were parasites in the water. Mm-hmm. And they had for about 325 years, I think it is, their sewage and everything else has all gone into the same place.
Yes.
And they knew how to correct it over 300 years ago, and they still haven't corrected it. Mm-hmm. And you have these parts of the world where this has been common, but just recently in the United States, due to the fact that the Germans have done so much work regarding water, mm-hmm. and to their horror, they discovered that there were narcotics and hormones in the water that could not even be filtered out. They didn't have anything to do it with.
You know, you don't have to go to Russia.
It.
You can go
right.
to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, has been recently in the news. In the 1980s, it went on for 20 years, there were some, at the Marine Corps base in Camp Lejeune, they were, a number of studies showed this water, the drinking water at several of the housing facilities that's affected thousands and thousands of people, that the drinking water was contaminated. It had, mm-hmm. you know, dry cleaning solvents and things like that had filtered through underground into the water supply,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't do anything about it. They refused to even admit that they had a problem. They didn't.
What about Washington D.C.?
Oh, yeah,
lead contamination in 2004.
Yeah,
prompted a $400 million plan to replace tens of thousands of service pipes made of lead. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think maybe that has something to do with the political fervor we're going through? Maybe I won't go into that. That's being a little sarcastic. But stop and think about it. I mean, Roman history, they have said that that's what affected a lot of the populace in Rome, was the lead.
The lead,
in
yes.
the pipes.
Yes.
And so here we've got, you know, our capital having this kind of a problem, a major problem. And what's the status on that? Here we are in 2010.
Well, you know, I'm not necessarily pro-environment or anti-environment. I'm apolitical about the
mm-hmm.
issues, but I think obviously the first step to solving a problem is to recognizing that it exists. And I think that, that in the past few years, we've come a long way into recognizing it exists. We still have a long way to go, and there are many people that still refuse to admit that there's a problem, but there also are many people that do admit that there's a problem. And I think that the Obama administration has particularly recognized that there's a problem because a number of people he's appointed to various posts have to do our water experts from our environment and water experts from the West. I mean, he's done people like Ann Castle, who was a prominent Denver water attorney. She's an assistant secretary of Interior for Water and Science. You've got John Tubbs, longtime Montana water resources engineer or administrator. You've got Cameron Davis, who was the CEO of the Alliance for the Great Lakes, as a special advisor to the EPA. You know, the Secretary of the Interior, Ken Salazar, is a native Coloradan, and of course he knows all the issues to do with water. So, I mean, there's an attempt, or at least an admission on the part of government that finally there's a problem, but then how do we solve the problems? Well, you and I have talked about lots and lots of problems. Well, there are lots more issues and problems, and lots more, and for every issue there are a dozen solution. So, I mean, it's just so much. I think that the water will be the great job generator of the 21st century because there's so many things. There's multi $1 trillion price tag on improving the water infrastructure, like the pipes in Washington, D.C. That was only $400 million. That's one town, one city. So you've got multiple trillions of dollars to be invested in water in this century, whether it's in infrastructure, whether it's in cleanup or whatever it is. So it's going to be a great job generator. It's ripe for entrepreneurship. I was just looking before we talked. I was just looking. There was the water prize. A 2010 water prize was to a group that that has figured out a way to filter out the pharmaceuticals and drugs from the water. I mean, these are all on a small scale, of course. But you know, University of Nebraska just got a $50 million grant or a gift to create a research facility for farming and water, because agriculture creates a lot of pollution with runoff from fertilizers and things like that. But that's not the, I mean, in towns and cities, you know, the stormwater runoff is incredible how it pollutes our source water. And everything, as I say, everything that goes up in the air and everything on the ground ends up in your water. Next time you toss something in the gutter, remember, that's going to end up in your water.
Not only that, but you bring out the bottled water information, how so much of that bottled water is contaminated and people are not aware of it. There's also the reality of information regarding plastics, that when the plastic bottles are in sun, there are particular chemicals that are released into the water. We have all of these things we're becoming aware of because of technology. And a lot of the things that didn't even exist 25 years ago are very common and prominent in our lives. Hormones, you know, all kinds of things that people take that go out through the human waste products, and then the processing systems, they're not able to filter out. But like you said, somebody's coming up with an understanding of how this can be done. There is so much that is out there in the way of information. Your book, Aqua Shock, is absolutely loaded with so much good material. And actually, I think you've done everybody a service, because by bringing it together in a book like this, and as you mentioned, the National Geographic has put out this wonderful book on water. That's their entire focus. Talks about it around the world. But it enables us as consumers to really think about what we're doing and how we're doing it. And it also gives a chance, as you mentioned, for the entrepreneurs to step up to the challenge of what can we do. And I think that that's part of what makes the human spirit so unique, because we can effectively develop whatever might be necessary for change. And if it's not one thing, it's going to be something else. Susan, what is your website that people can go to find out more?
I have a little bit of information. Unfortunately, I don't have a website devoted to water. I do have a little bit on my Facebook page, Susan J. Marks.
And I blog on
Huffington Post on their green page about water, and offer answers and solutions like that. You know, something just I might want to offer just one little tiny step. I think the solution to our water woes are going to be in tiny little steps that we all pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And something, and I keep saying this, but it's so simple. Something like, you know, when you leave the water on when you're brushing your teeth, it's like 8 gallons of water wasted. I mean, the water runoff is almost unfathomable. Hundreds of thousands of gallons. I mean, in the city of Atlanta, in 1 year recently, there was enough water runoff. The city of Boston, there was enough water runoff, just water that ends up down the drains because it's not used for anything. There was enough to provide the needs for the city of Atlanta for an entire year. So I mean, we just waste so much water here in the United States. You know, turn off the water when you're brushing your teeth. You can save 8 gallons of water a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that doesn't, oh well, what big deal? What's 8 gallons? Well, in a year's time, if we've got 300 million people, I mean, you know, that's a lot of water that's being saved. You know, I think conservation is going to be the first step. I mean, and then other simple things you can do. You know, don't wash your car in your driveway. It's going to end up that all that dirt and contaminants you wash off the car again, going to end up in the water supply. You know, either wash it on your lawn so it has the opportunity to soak back in the ground, because the earth has some natural mechanisms to purify the water, or have it washed at a car wash where they have recycled, where they recycle and clean the water. You know, don't run your dishwasher when you don't need to. I mean, these are dumb things when people say, oh yeah, what difference can that make? It really makes a difference, because we, you know, when you multiply, the multiples here are almost unfathomable to a lot of us. I mean, when you think about it, it just, I use the term mind-boggling, but the numbers to do with water are just staggering, I think.
That's why your book, Aqua Shock, is a good read on so many levels. Susan, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for
having
me.
It's been a pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't forget, Aqua Shock by Susan Marks. You got the kids in at school. By golly, this is something they would really be interested in, would make a great bit of material for a class project. We'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hello and welcome. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to give me a call, call me at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Oh, get your pad of paper ready, too, because I've got a wonderful recipe for you. Tempura shrimp. Ooh, yum. I love tempura, and I love it with vegetables. Shrimp, it's a especially good. So I've got a neat little beer batter recipe that I may want to share with you if we have the time today. But meanwhile, again, if you want to give me a call, 888-815-9756. And if you're a first-time listener to the Donna Sebo Show, all you need to do when you call in is give me your first name or your initial. And, of course, I love to know where you're calling in from. And then just relax. I'll tell you what I perceive. And after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you are interested in discussing. I wanted to share a quote with you by David Niven. I really like this. He said, do something today that reflects who you are, what you're capable of, what you care about. Give yourself plenty of evidence of what you can do, and you will not doubt your abilities to do anything. Give yourself plenty of evidence of what you can do, and you will not doubt your abilities to do anything. David Niven, for those younger that may not be aware of him, he was a phenomenal actor. And I really think that this bit of wisdom that he shares is so important, because too often we talk ourselves down. Boy, I can remember the years when I would do that. There were so many things that I was very, very good at doing. And I used to focus on what it was I didn't do well. Have you done that? Where you just go, oh, I'm so terrible at doing such and such and so and so. And you'll strive and strive and strive to be what you're not. Now, that doesn't mean that at times in life we're going to have to take care of things or do things that we don't necessarily like. I'm not the greatest housekeeper in the world, but that's something that's a part of life. If you want to keep things in order, you take care of it yourself, unless you hire someone to do it. And even then, you still have to train somebody to do it the way you want it done. And you have to pay attention to make sure that the work is consistently done. That's just life. But it's so much easier if you're someone like an Irma Brombeck who just loved to write. She hated housework. So she ended up making enough money where she could hire someone else to clean her house, and she was busy doing writing, which millions of people enjoyed. It was better for her to put her time, effort, and energy into something that really was satisfying to her and fulfilling. Well, it's the same with the rest of us. We need to remember that when we can focus on our strengths, inadvertently, we're going to pull ourselves up to such a level that those components that we feel are weaknesses of ours somehow or another get folded in and developed in the right way. And that's important. We can't all be cashiers. We can't all be scientists. We can't all be truck drivers. We can't all be anything. But we can be what we enjoy being, do it so well, that wherever we are, we're going to be an example of the finest and best, and it makes a difference. Mediocrity is not something we need to accept in our life. But if we expect the best out of ourselves, and we recognize when we give our best, pat yourself on the back. Say, by golly, I did one heck of a good job there. Give it your best, and you're never going to really be truly disappointed with yourself, because if you're giving your very best, can't do any more than that. So I really liked his quote, and I just wanted to share that with you because I think it's important to focus on what you do well. My husband, when he was in college, there was a professor in one of the classes that he attended said, if a person can do one thing well, they usually can do anything well that they set their mind to. And that impressed him quite significantly, and he shared that with a lot of people that he's ended up mentoring through the years. So again, focus on your strengths and not your weaknesses, and you'll come out way ahead. Yesterday, I ran out of time, and I want to continue with this story that I started right towards the latter part of the hour yesterday, because it's amazing. We never know it all. We never know it all. And I was talking about magnetic people, and I said, gee, have you ever been told you have a magnetic personality? Well, that can be very complimentary, but what if you really were magnetic? Now, there are written points of information regarding people that have this magnetism in their body. And the earliest record that there were, apparently at this time, and I could be wrong, maybe you know of when it's earlier, try 1877. And I had started to talk about this yesterday, and then we ran out of time. So I'm going to start right at the beginning. This is about a 17-year-old young lady. Her name was Carolyn Clare, and she was of London, Ontario. And she got very sick, very, very sick. She didn't feel like eating. She lost over 40 pounds. And the doctors couldn't find anything wrong with her, not a thing. And it was a few months after being so very, very sick, she started having seizures. Now, this is what was recorded about her particular experiences. They said her body would be so rigid, during these seizures, and her eyes would be very fixed, didn't move. She was traveling out of body to different places while at the same time speaking eloquently of the beauty of what she was seeing. So she was in an out-of-body trance situation where people were hearing all about what she was experiencing as she was talking to them. Now, when she'd come back from these episodes, she was so exhausted. She would get very depressed. She didn't want to talk to anybody. Well, you can imagine going through something that would be that dramatic. It would make you not too happy with coming back to the real world as you had to know it. Now, it was a year and a half later after this happened to her, her original illness, that she became very, very lighthearted and started giving off electrical charges. If you shook her hand, it was darned uncomfortable because you'd get a shock. And they did tests where if she joined hands with a ring of 20 people, everybody got the electrical shock. Her body ended up turning magnetic, and metal objects actually would stick to her. Someone else would have to remove the metal pieces while she stroked an arm rapidly from the wrist upward. She could only eat with wooden utensils because things would stick in her mouth. Now, in 1890, there was a 16-year-old recorded, and it was Louis Hamburger, that was his name. He was investigated by the Maryland College for his magnetic abilities. There were people, professionals, in the medical and the electrical area of expertise. They watched as heavy iron or steel rods dangled from his fingertips, and he moved metal filings up the inside of sealed glass beakers. How did he do it? Why was this the case with him? They weren't able to figure out that one either. Well, one of the later ones occurred in 1987, and it was in Russia. Leonid Tinkalvev and his family became aware of their ability. The whole family was affected this way, to have metal objects stick to them. Now, Leonid, his wife, their daughter, and grandson only had to concentrate and think about generating heat inside their bodies. And when they did this, apparently their bodies became magnetic. Leonid could cause up to 52 pounds of ferrous metal to stick to him. Amazing. Now, when did this happen to him? It was after the nuclear accident at Chernobyl. That's right. It was about 700 miles from their home. This didn't happen before that event. And do you know that in 1991 in Bulgaria, there was a contest for magnetic people? More than 300 people showed up. So apparently, there's quite a few individuals that have this capability. How? Why? Who knows? They honestly don't know. I wonder if it's the water. Okay, I'm being a stinker. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment. Now, if you want to give me a call, 888-815-9756 is the telephone number you'll call into. Also, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Eldon Taylor. Eldon has been a phenomenal researcher. He's been a guest on my show before, and we've talked about mind programming, etc. But he decided he was going to do something on the philosophical side of life. It's called What Does That Mean? I think you'll enjoy him. He's going to be my guest tomorrow. Okay, we're going to be taking a break, and if you want to give me a buzz, the telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Now, do you have that pad of paper handy along with a pen? If you like tempura, I love it. I just think it's wonderful. And I can remember the first time I ever had shrimp tempura was in a Japanese restaurant in the valley of Los Angeles, and it was just absolutely magnificent. I had never tasted anything like it. It was light. It was airy. So many times I had had battered items, and often it was very heavy, and I just didn't like it. But this was just wonderful. Well, I have got here a beef batter shrimp recipe. So nice, so easy, that I think you'll really enjoy it. And it's not going to really be a hassle to fix. Really, it's just really easy. So this is what you're going to need. And you're going to need one 12-ounce bottle of beer. And I don't know if using light would make any difference, but just remember, when you're using the beer, the alcohol will evaporate away as it's going to be cooking. But you use one 12-ounce bottle of beer. You use a cup plus one-third a cup of Wondra flour or unbleached all-purpose flour. You're going to need a teaspoon of Dijon mustard, a little bit of kosher salt, and you can have a tartar sauce. You can make your own, or you can buy some, or you can use soy sauce. And I have a quick recipe for tartar sauce to go along with this if you like. And then you're going to need 3 tablespoons of oil, your favorite oil, a vegetable oil like olive oil is great, a 1 pound of large shrimp peeled and deveined. Now, you might want to split the shrimp so they're sort of fanned. It all depends on how you like to serve it. You can just serve it just whole, or you can split it down the middle if you've got those really big, big prawns, which are just marvelous. But if you do that, then you can just split them and then have a fanned type of an effect as you dip them. They'll cook up that way. Now, you're going to preheat your oven. That's right. You're going to be using your oven. Preheat your oven to 300 degrees. And while that's preheating, what you're going to do is whisk together your beer, 1 cup of the beer, 1 cup of flour, mustard, and a 1/4 teaspoon of salt until smooth. Now, what I'd say is to make it easy, and I've done this with a number of recipes and for different things, just put it all in the blender and push the button, zap, and you've got it mixed. Then you're going to strain your batter into another bowl, and you just let it set for 10 minutes. You leave it alone. Set the timer, 10 minutes. You want to save the beer that you've got left over, and you can make your tartar sauce, and I'll give you a recipe for that in just a moment. Let's go back to the shrimp. You take 1/3 cup of the flour and put it into a pie plate lined with wax paper or parchment paper. Now, your batter, after sitting for 10 minutes, should have the consistency of a thick pancake batter. If it's a little too thick, then what you want to do is whisk into up of 1/4 cup more beer. So, again, that extra beer might come in handy. Now, this is what you have to do. You heat 1 1/2 tablespoons of your oil in a large nonstick skillet over medium-high heat, and working with 1/2 of the shrimp at a time, you toss them in the flour. You lift the wax paper on both sides to move them around, and then you transfer your shrimp to a strainer and shake off the excess flour. And then you coat the shrimp with the batter, letting the excess drip off,
and add them to the skillet. You cook, turning once until they're golden, about 1 to 2 minutes per side. And more batter, by the way, is going to stay on the side you first put down in the skillet. And then you sprinkle your cooked shrimp with salt, transfer it to a baking sheet, and keep them warm in the oven while you cook the remaining shrimp in the remaining oil. Now, here's the tartar sauce recipe. I told you it was easy. Now, this will make about 1 1/4 cups. Now, what you'll do, you'll take 3/4 cup of mayonnaise, 1/4 cup of finely chopped dill pickle, 1 trimmed and chopped medium scallion, and that is going to be about 2 tablespoons of scallion once it's all chopped up, 1 tablespoon of drained capers, 1 tablespoon of fresh lemon juice, 1 teaspoon of Dijon mustard, 1/2 teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce, and 1/4 teaspoon of hot sauce. Put it all in the bowl, beat it up together, put it in a pretty dish along with that beautifully fried shrimp, and you have got something that everybody's going to really love. And if you want to double this up, great, because I'll tell you what, I have yet to be at a party where you serve fried shrimp, fresh shrimp. I mean, it just seems to be the favorite of so many people. It'll go like crazy. So anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you today. It's Good Eats, and I think that it makes for just an absolutely wonderful light dinner and something you can really enjoy. Now, so many of you are out there looking for jobs. Maybe you've got spouse, kids that are having a tough time. When I was flying to Alaska and when I came back from Alaska, on each of the trips, I was talking with young men that were going up to Alaska for work. And the young man that I met on one part of my trip, his name was Eli. He was from Idaho, and he was very much involved with a construction business, and he said that he couldn't get any work. He said, the economy has really hit us very, very hard. Construction work has just fallen to the wayside. So he said, I went to the unemployment office, and lo and behold, they had job listings for work in Alaska. And he had to leave his family back in Idaho. He's going to have to be gone for almost 3 months to do the work up there in the fishing industry in their 16-hour days. And they're hard-working days, but he said, I'll make enough money to help us get through winter of this year and next year. He said, it's really hard, so he said, I had to go where I could find work, and he said, regrettably, I have to leave my family behind. Well, I'll tell you what, this is something that's happening to a lot of people. There was another young man that was up in Alaska working in Dutch Harbor, and his family was down in California, and he had to take a bus up to a certain location so he could catch his flight, and then was on the long commute up to Alaska, and he said, it's work. I can't get work down in California. So this is something that's happening with a lot of people. And I thought I would share something quickly with you. In the past 3 years, almost 9 million jobs have disappeared from our economy, and underemployment, part-time contract, and freelance work has doubled, reaching a record high of 6.4% of all the employed in the 4th quarter of 2009. Now, this is a fairly new study, then that means that there's another 8.9 million people who are ready, willing, and able to work full-time jobs, but they're having to settle for less than 35 hours a week. Andrew Sum, who's an economist at Northeastern University and the author of this particular study, said, we've never seen a rise of that magnitude before. And since 2007, thousands of American companies have turned to transient workers to meet demand, but have so far refused to add permanent jobs in significant numbers. That leaves an unemployment rate hovering at about 10%. Probably is more. The hardest hit segments of the workforce are construction, manufacturing, middle management, and service, with the young and less educated suffering the most. Well, there's another side. Those people that would like to get an education are finding that they're not going to be able to get it without really having to do it gradually. I was talking with someone that is very dedicated to their education, And they're only taking like one class a semester. They said they can't take any more. They can't afford to take any more. And the cost of going to school is skyrocketing. So we need some resolutions here. Some of you are, who are creative thinkers, we need to have you there to come up with new solutions to a problem that is occurring or problems that are occurring with change. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul and your ingenuity. This is opportunity for you. Yes, times can be hard, but maybe it's going to have a blessing in disguise for you that you never knew was going to be there. I'll be talking with you same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. See you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.